Remember, Katrina, you must call me Doctor.
Have you ever thought what it's like to be wanderers in the fourth dimension? To be exiles?
This is the Doctor speaking. Well, one of them. Is there anybody there?
I hate computers and refuse to be bullied by them.
And their leader was called?
The Doctor.
Are you trying to tell us that you are the Doctor?
That's right. I've reversed the polarity of the neutron flow so the TARDIS will be free of the force field.
You may be a Doctor, but I'm the Doctor. The definite article, you might say. Would you like a jelly bit?
I'm a Time Lord.
I'm the Doctor. Or will be if this regeneration works out.
And it seems on a moment too soon.
How do you do? I'm the Doctor.
I am the Doctor!
I'm the Doctor, by the way. What's your name?
Rose.
Nice to meet you, Rose. Run for your life.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I'm the Doctor.
How old are you?
Hello, I'm the Doctor.
Great eyes are cool.
It's a fez. I wear a fez now. Fezzes are cool.
The first question. The question that must never be answered. The oldest question in the universe. In plain sight.
Yes, but what is the question?
It's the same story every time, and it always begins with the same two words.
What two words?
Doctor Who?
Doctor Who?
Doctor
Who? Oh, Doctor Who?
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 Doctor Who? If we knew his name, we might have a clue to all this.
Well, 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 who would have thunk it, but it looks like Series 7 of Doctor Who is actually more than just on the improvement, I would say, in my humble opinion. This is the TARDIS Blend here at geeksofdoom.com. My name is Greg Davies.
And I am the incredible Red Hulk. Doctor Tom Sheridan.
We should have really prefaced that with, by the way, we talk spoilers. Oh, wow.
Doctor Mad.
Now, look, before we jump into the, our evaluations and everything, I'm going to play a clip from arguably the best scene out of the entire episode. So, are you ready, Tom? Okay, I take that as a yes.
Can she be revived like you were?
I hope so.
Doctor!
Oh, great, great. Attack of the supermodels. Time for a plan.
Now, Doctor, this one's on me.
Okay, you get the general gist, but that was arguably the best scene out of the entire episode. Tom?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, sorry, I had to come back down from my Doctor rage.
I know you're a clever chap and all that, but there's a few little nuances in this episode that I think a few people missed, even though that I thought they were pretty easily on the surface. You caught the innuendo reference there in that scene, visually, of course, right, with the sonic screwdriver?
Yes.
Mm. And the other thing about that is, now, not a lot of people have really talked about this online, except for people over in England, but do you remember the old English television series called The Avengers? Not the comic series.
I do, because Diana Rigg
was
our main villain. And you know who else she's in? She is the character I can't even remember with the gay king or prince or whatever, and she's in Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm.
Another Game of Thrones Doctor Who.
Absolutely, absolutely. Diana Rigg, also the best performance of this episode, I thought. I thought she was a wonderful villain. I thought she was a wonderful villain. And Jenny's little action sequence there that we played the clip from.
But don't discount that talking lobster that was on her chest. Because I think
That was really interesting.
He did a really great, remarkable job. His name's Leroy Johnson.
Leroy Johnson.
Yes.
and we should pay tribute to him very somberly, in fact, because as it is well known, he was tragically murdered by Stick.
And as such, I had sushi tonight.
Oh, well, there you go.
Had some lobster.
There you go. You know, I got to say, I was actually considering that little dude was both puppet and animatronic and stop motion by the looks of the effects. I thought it was pretty good, pretty well done.
I thought it was good. Katie actually, my girlfriend Katie, laughed hysterically hard, and I was like, "What do you want? It's Doctor Who." It's pretty good for Doctor Who.
There were some people on the Gallifrey base forums that were saying, "Oh wow, it's so cute."
Yeah,
I was like,
"It's not marshmallow really. Make you fat cute, but pretty cute."
I really loved this episode. I really loved it.
I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, I really loved the way they kind of, and I think it was originally intended to be a two-parter because it was sort of a split plot. Like the first half was very Dr. Light, and then the second half the Doctor shows up. And I mean, that was a great little twist there as well.
Yeah, I won't lie though, I did get kind of bored not seeing the Doctor because I felt like the episode hadn't started because we didn't see enough of the Doctor. But it was almost worth it to see that nice little montage that they caught up with the old-timey effect.
Yeah, with the Instagram filter.
I really liked that. I thought that was good.
Yeah, me too. I thought that was really good. The old film-style montage thing really worked well. As did the Doctor's Yorkshire accent, I might say. I thought his Yorkshire accent...
That wasn't doing it for me.
Oh, well, I thought it was quite... I thought it was quite good, love. I thought it was really, really
I'm actually really good. Banned from doing any kind of accent on any of Greg's shows.
no, don't do that.
So is Joe, Jay Fowler.
Yeah.
Sound with Jay.
So
violate it, I don't.
Did you catch the GPS gag in there?
No, I didn't.
You didn't catch the GPS gag?
No.
Thomas, also known as Tom Tom.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. Yeah. There was a few people complaining about that online, but I thought it was really good. I mean, it was Strax. Strax has always been comic relief, and he was enjoyable this episode as well, especially when he was accused of getting into the Sherbet Delights.
I like that part. Yeah. You'll wait for me in the carriage.
Yeah, yeah. He was quite good this episode, and incidentally, he really was. The person that saved the day. It really wasn't, you know, any of the other main characters except for Strax.
Mm-hmm. Strax did a damn good job.
Yeah, absolutely. The Tegan reference was killer as well. You caught that when during the Doctor flashback when he was talking about that gobby Australian that needed to get back to Heathrow Airport and
Brave. No, I wanted to ask you about that.
Yeah, but he says Braveheart Clara. It's a Tegan reference, and as a matter of fact, this is one thing that we've really fallen down on the job about, Tom. It's one of those symbolic gestures that they do in the episodes, and we're usually on top of this kind of stuff. But we've kind of avoided it. We did talk about the Rings of Akatan. There was a reference to Susan, the granddaughter of Doctor Who, of the Doctor. And
was there?
Yeah, you know, I was here with my granddaughter, you know, a long time ago. He said that. Well, ever since that episode, there has been a reference to every following Doctor. So in the Rings of Akatan, we had the reference to Susan from the first Doctor era. The next episode was Cold War, which was the Ice Warriors, which were introduced during Patrick Troughton's reign, and also the disappearing TARDIS using the HADS system was a Patrick Troughton reference as well. Hyde, we had the crystal from Metabilis 3, which was a third Doctor reference. And you could argue that the time frame was the third Doctor Who with 1974 and so on. Journey to the Center of the TARDIS, lots of Tom Baker references in there, especially with it really paying tribute to the invasion of time, whether you went deeper into the TARDIS with Tom Baker. And this one, we had a reference to the fifth Doctor in the form of the Braveheart Tegan reference. And so the question is, what the hell are they going to do for the sixth Doctor in the Neil Gaiman episode? Are we going to see him? Are we going to see like a horrible suit of colors, or are we going to see a cat brooch? Or,
you know, it's Neil Gaiman, and we actually had to delay the start of TARDIS Blend tonight because I hadn't caught the preview at the end. I had to do something, so I watched it, and it looks super fun. It seems like you could get away with anything.
It does look like a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to that episode very much. And I'm sure that they're going to squeeze in a sixth Doctor reference there, because the season finale, there'll have to be some kind of seventh Doctor reference, which would lead you to believe that the 50th anniversary would have the eighth Doctor, perhaps.
Man, don't tease me,
Chris. Well, I think they're teasing with this. So this whole season so far, this part of the season with Clara anyway, has really been this metatextual homage to the classic series anyway in a lot of ways, because they keep bringing up dates as well. I don't know if you noticed. There's all these dates, you know, and a lot of them are referenced to events that happened in the lifetime of the Doctor Who series. And so whether or not it goes anywhere plot-wise, I'm not certain about, but it does reference a lot of the history of the show, which I would assume the most obvious thing to do with that would be it's like a little bit of a tip of the hat to the 50th anniversary of the series, I would say. So that's going on there. The other thing I thought was really a nice touch in this episode was the client that kept going to Madame Vastra and he kept fainting all the time. I thought that was pretty amusing, and it wasn't too overdone. It was worth a chuckle. It was well paced. It wasn't overdone. And the reason I bring that up is, you know, sometimes it's easy for us to forget that Doctor Who is a multi-generational show, so it's there for kids as well, right? And that's the kind of thing that kids would get a good old laugh about. You know, this dude that keeps showing up and he faints all the time every time he sees a lizard woman or something. You know, it's a good laugh, and I think that was great of Mark Gatiss to throw that little bit in there as well. On that note as well, I think this is one of the best Gatiss episodes I've ever seen.
It was pretty good.
Yeah, he was on the ball this season with Cold War and now this. Brilliant, I thought. Absolutely brilliant.
I didn't like Cold War as much as you did, but...
Yeah. So I'm going to jump into the rating. I'm going to give this one 4 out of 5.
I'm going to give it a 3 out of 5.
Okay, 7 out of 5. Sorry, 7 out of 10, I should say, from both of us here at the TARDIS Blend. Let's move on a bit, Tom. You may or may not know that this was actually episode number 100 of the new Doctor Who. Yes, it was.
The new series, yeah.
The new series since 2005. American
cable, that's significant.
Yeah.
Because it means... incorrectly now, because it doesn't matter, that you could make a certain amount of money and so could the cast on reruns in syndication. And it doesn't matter anymore because people watch everything online and cable sucks. Except for the BBC America, which is awesome.
Well, I got to say, there was an interesting poll in recognition of this over at Gallifrey Bay. Somebody decided to write up a poll that included every single episode of the new Doctor Who. And above and beyond every other selection, the standalone winner as the best episode ever out of new Doctor Who, out of 100 episodes, is, take a guess, Tom.
I don't know.
Blink.
No idea. Blink. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Blink is...
If you can only pick one, if I could pick two, it would be... second episode of Eccleston's run, and that would be right below Blink.
Really? I thought you would have put The Doctor's Wife higher up on that list.
That would be a number 3.
Yeah. I'm similar to you. I would have, but my number 2 would be the Doctor's wife, I think. Okay. So, yeah. You know, but that was I thought that was a really interesting note, that Blink is still held very highly in the hearts of fans. I thought that was like a good, nice little note to...
I mean, it's just one of those episodes where you don't have to know anything or anyone, and you just jump in, find out a little bit about the Doctor, some time shit, and it's all said and done, 45 minutes.
I've really thought that a lot about the last three episodes as well. Like, that they really were very good episodes that you could probably point to people and say, hey, check out any of these three episodes, you're going to love it. Journey to the Center of the TARDIS, this one we've just seen, and Hyde. I thought they were pretty exemplary of modern Doctor Who, I thought. So, although you weren't too in agreement with me on Hyde.
No.
No. Okay, well... jumping into the Clara mystery, I'm not sure where you're at on this, Tom, but I'm still thinking that she's the original Clara. Something is going to happen to her in the season finale, which splits her across time, and the Doctor, who is attempting to investigate this Clara mystery, is inadvertently leading her to that which causes this mystery, so he's in a loop and he doesn't know it. So that's what I'm thinking.
I think it's not going to be as tidy. For Moffat, who is not a tidy person, I think it's going to be a little bit more complex.
Yeah, and the other thing I was thinking of when she was talking about in the Wi-Fi episode, what was that one? It was the first one that they came back with on this half of the season, The Bells of St. John. The Bells of St. John, when she refers to the woman in the shop that gave her the Doctor's number...
Yeah.
I think that she gives it to herself. A future version of her gives herself the Doctor's number.
No.
That's what I'm thinking.
No.
Well, who do you think it is, this mystery woman in the shop?
I don't think they give a shit. That won't even be mentioned at all.
I disagree. They're going to come back to it. Otherwise, you're going to have these like hardcore Whovians like chomping at the bit going, who the hell gave her the Doctor's number?
Hey, be fair. You're going to have those people no matter
what. Well, that's true to a degree, yes.
And honestly, like, I just really feel like that's one of those, oh, yeah. I mean, it's something that like Moffat can play with, but I don't think it was intentional.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I guess we'll see. I think they're going to come back to that. Okay, I've got some 50th anniversary news and rumors for you.
Let's go with the rumors first. Okay,
rumors. Well, there is the news this week has really got to do with a mix of news and rumors. The news part of it is that there is going to be an online prequel to the 50th anniversary minisodes. Done by the BBC, and they've confirmed that classic Doctors will be appearing in them. No confirmation on who it is. There is rumour, though, that it is Paul McGann that is going to be in the minisodes. There's a little bit of rumours running around that Tom Baker's involved, but I guess we're just going to have to wait and see on that.
Now, here's the thing, Greg, I don't know if you caught it, but Tom Baker has actually been in... BBC Studio cutting some footage of him talking about previous episodes that they've been airing after the new Doctor Who and slightly before.
Yes,
on BBC America. I'm wondering if that means he's open to doing something else. And I also want to know why we can't get number 7 in either.
It's a good question. I don't know. I know a lot of the older Doctors are being involved in a new audio adventure that's going to be put out by Big Finish for the 50th anniversary. I cannot recall the name of the adventure, but it's going to include a couple of the new Doctors as well, except Chris Eccleston. So it'll be interesting to see where that goes. So there's always that. If fans want some classic Doctors, I mean, I think that's going to be a big hit for Big Finish this year. When that does come out. So it wouldn't surprise me if Baker is called in to do some voiceovers for that stuff as well. So at the very least, I mean, even if you don't have many multiple Doctors in the 50th anniversary special this year, there's a ton of other media out there that does incorporate the older Doctors that can really satisfy that flavor as well, including the Prisoners of Time comic series too, which is exceptional.
It has to be this season. It has to.
Well, you want Tom Baker in the 50th.
I want. Yes. I don't even care if he didn't have to be a doctor.
I don't want him in there. I love Tom Baker, but no. The only way I would...
I want him to be a goofy uncle or something.
No. The only way I would go with Tom Baker in the 50th anniversary if he was doing a voiceover of some kind that was like a recording or something along those lines. It wouldn't fit as you know. Unfortunately, I don't mean to sound ageist, but you know, he's.
I don't care.
Yeah, I know you don't care. I know you love Tom. Tom loves Tom. Tom.
Thomas.
So there you go. And the rumors about John Hurt being an incarnation of the Doctor are still persisting online. Still no official confirmation on that. Still no official, well, not official, but still no reliable sources on that. But at the moment, it's still up in the air. And as I said, I'm not exactly buying into that theory, though it is possible that he could be a Time Lord of some kind. Now, do you really, really want me to blow your mind with some out-there rumors, Tom?
Yeah, because okay. I think the other rumor is just so lame, and okay. It's not going to happen.
This is the deal, dude. This is it. And I don't know if this is official or not. I cannot claim to know any of the insiders on this, but this rumor has been floating around for 2 weeks, and it was just too unbelievable for me to bring it up in previous episodes. But there's a lot of persistence going on there with people saying that they have colleagues in the BBC that have confirmed this for them. And that is that they have held screen tests, auditions, and casting for the 12th Doctor.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all.
The rumor is that Ben Daniels, 48-year-old British actor, is going to be the 12th Doctor and is going to be taking over from Matt Smith in the Christmas special or the 50th anniversary. Hmm. So I tell you this right here on this show, I'm not prepared to put total faith on this rumor at the moment, but I will say that if we get a regeneration in the 50th anniversary special in which Matt Smith regenerates into a new Doctor, I'll be more than happy to continue the TARDIS blend.
Oh, there you have it, folks.
So if we have a regeneration, we'll continue. So, but that's...
I think that's really... Do you think they would go that old again?
He is... yeah, I think they would. I think it's a natural response to having such a young Doctor. The guy, if you do Google searches on Ben Daniels, British actor, he kind of looks Doctor-esque in some respects. He is, you know, a little bit older than Tennant, I believe. So, you know, it's kind of it kind of works. He's not too old. He's not ancient like Bill Hartnell was.
Yeah, he looks pretty old. He doesn't look very old like I was expecting.
Yeah. I think he would. He has a Doctor-esque look to him, which is a good start. There's got to be some kind of quirky oddity about the actor that is playing the Doctor. You know, in my personal opinion, there has to be. And you need to be able to pick it up from the get-go. And I think he would be an interesting choice. So that's the word at the moment, folks. Nothing official. It's all rumors. Take it with a boulder of salt. But if it does turn out that we have a regeneration in the 50th anniversary of Doctor Who...
So he would be 49 years old. 49, 50 years old.
Yeah, in his 50s.
No. Like, I just did the math. He would be 50 for the 50th.
Maybe.
50-year-old Doctor, maybe. 50th anniversary.
The alleged title of his first episode as Doctor is 12th Night, which may be the Christmas special. So that's probably rubbish.
I would be super psyched just to get a new Doctor in. Not that I hate Matt Smith. I love him. Mm. I'm ready for some new flavor.
Yeah, I think I'm in agreement with you there. I think it's the right time as well. Like, this is Matt's third year. A good time limit for Doctors in the classic years. Seems to be 3 years. Patrick Troughton was there for three. Peter Davison was there for three, and some people forget that David Tennant essentially was there for 3 years. He did three seasons and a couple of special episodes, and then that was his tenure as Doctor Who. So essentially, it was like 3 years he did, and so it would be a good time for Matt. I think he's starting to do other acting jobs now. He's out there and being cast in Hollywood movies. He's going to be in a movie with Ryan Gosling.
Yes, it looks awful.
Yeah.
Ryan Gosling's good.
Yeah, but it should be interesting where it goes from here. And I think, I'm perfectly fine with the idea of going with a new Doctor. Although I'd love Matt, I would enjoy another year with him if he does want to stay on. He's a very good Doctor. He does the role really well, but at the same time, I'm kind of with you in the sense that, yeah, it does feel kind of right for change. The 50th anniversary feels like the right time for this, and what a way to pass on the torch.
Yeah.
You know, that would give the new actor a lot to live up to, though, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's because we know we're not going to get a Patrick Stewart Doctor.
This is possible as well, you know. I mean, it would be delightful if we could get a Patrick Stewart in there as the Doctor.
I think he's just too big.
Well, I don't know. Doctor Who has a tendency to go with mostly unknowns, with the exception of the first two Doctors of the new era.
David Tennant was relatively unknown.
No, he was fairly known in England. He was a Shakespearean actor. In England. He's been on TV. He was in Harry Potter. You know, he was quite kind of well known.
Was he in Harry Potter?
Yeah, Barty Crouch Jr.
Oh.
Yeah. He's fairly well known. Whereas Matt was like pretty much a completely unknown to international fans. He had been in a few television shows over in England. And I think a movie as well, but he was fairly unknown. And looking at this guy's resume as well, I mean, he's relatively known in England, but he's not hugely popular. He's a relatively unknown actor in that respect, and it could be possible. Now, next rumor, and this is this could be absolutely nothing as well, but one of the Doctor Who magazines is being published at the moment, and somebody took a photo of one of the pages, put it online on a Tumblr somewhere, and it has a picture of Riversong on it, and the caption reads, "Riversong, back from the library."
Yeah.
So naturally, a lot of the fans are whipping up a frenzy over this.
Those magazines are known for being overly gotcha.
Yeah, they are.
Indeed. I mean, I used to work in a comic shop, and we used to sell them, and it was like, you can't trust anything on the cover.
That's true. That's absolutely true. And then they say things to lead you on so that, and this could actually be a leak by the magazine to, you know, get people to buy the issue. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like and it could well be part of that. So it could be motivated by profit. There's no doubt about that. However, having said that, I was having my doubts about this until somebody brought up a really interesting theory at the Gallifrey subreddit. And that is that not only is it possible that we may see a post-library River, it's possible that we've already seen her.
As Clara.
No, not as Clara.
The Doctor.
No.
As the Incredible Hulk.
No, as River. And here's how. No. Here's how. All right, I guess. Every time we see River Song, she has what in her possession, Tom?
A nose.
Yeah, I know she has a nose, but what does she have? Come on, you know this. It's like a staple signature.
Lady part. I have no idea.
Stop looking at her lady parts and look at the plot. She's got the journal, the TARDIS diary.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right? She's always got that.
I was going to be an ex guest.
Right, yeah. So she's got the TARDIS journal, right? And the only time she arrives to see the Doctor and she doesn't have it in her possession is when she appears at the end of A Good Man Goes to War and reveals to him exactly who she is.
Yes.
That's the only time. And it's the theory that's being run by this user over at the Gallifrey subreddit is speculating for the most part, but what he brings up is that Stephen Moffat isn't one to just throw in little things here and there without significance. Like, you know, that there's certain things in there. Like, we all remember series 5 where the second Doctor shows up to Amy in the Weeping Angels episode while her eyes are closed. And I said from the get-go, that's a second Doctor, dude. That's not that Doctor that we saw in that episode. And you're like, no, you're looking too much into it. You're looking into it too much. And I was right. You know, he adds little pieces in there that are stemming back as far as the library episode that he did under Russell T. Davies' reign. So it's quite possible that this may be the case. Now, I'm not sure whether he's going to go this route or not. Because I think a lot of fans have questioned whether Riversong can come back from the library or not. And I think he wanted that to be her inevitable conclusion of her story. So it's still up in the air. What do you think? Do you want to see a post-library River?
Why the hell not? I don't care. I want to see River and Captain Jack.
So do I.
After John Barrowman said, you know, somebody asked a fan question and they said, it was Moffat.
Yeah.
And he said, what would happen if the two characters meet?
Yeah.
And he'd be like, he would be taken aback and do a bow and be very gracious to her.
Yeah, and he would salute. What the hell is up with that?
I want to know more about that.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. And, you know, I wonder, though, if part of me wondered when I watched Hyde and the Doctor rescued one of the first human time travelers that was stuck in the pocket universe. Part of me wondered if she has some kind of connection to Riversong and Captain Jack. Maybe not directly, but more in terms of a loose connection in the fact that when we first meet Captain Jack, he's ex-time agency,
mm-hmm.
You know. So I kind of wonder in some respects whether, you know, she was the beginning of what would become the time agency.
Oh, I've thought that for years.
No, I'm talking about the recent girl in the...
I always thought River Song was like one of the pioneers of the time agency.
Yeah, see, and that's where I'm thinking it's kind of going in some ways. Like, who can you think would be better to make sure that time is maintained by the humans? The Doctor can't do it. He's running around the universe saving everyone, right?
Yeah.
But River Song, if she lives beyond the library, I mean, that would be a perfect thing for her to settle into. And she would also keep her closer to the Doctor as well,
yeah,
in a lot of ways.
I think that that's something I would love to see. I don't know if we'll ever see it, but...
Yeah, it's kind of a bit of a fan wank wish, isn't it?
Yeah,
but yeah,
it's I don't know that they could convince the powers that be that was a strong enough pitch to make.
Yeah, and I'm not even convinced that Barrowman's not going to be in the 50th anniversary.
Yeah,
you know, he said that he's not, but he, you know, it could well be possible that, you know, with him, you know, saying, making the announcement that he's in talks with BBC was a step over the line, and they were like, don't fucking say another word.
Yeah.
You know, because it could well be possible that that could be another gotcha that Moffat is playing with it. You know, that's the ace up the sleeve, maybe one of them. You know, it'll be interesting to see where that goes. So, yeah, fingers crossed, we'll see how it goes. But anyway, this week, the Crimson Horror. Lots of fun. 7 out of 10 from both Tom and myself. And next week, we're looking forward to the return of Neil Gaiman, who is bringing back to life the Cybermen. Not the Cybersmen, the original Cybermen from classic Doctor Who. And man, do they look freaking awesome in that trailer.
They do, and we also saw the Doctor is the savior of the Cybermen.
Yes, now
apparently.
That's interesting.
I'm guessing that there's... That's probably not true, but it's a nice hook.
Yeah, it is a nice hook. The other thing I wanted to bring up before we close out, Tom, is what did you think about... Let me bring this clip in here so that people can hear what we're talking about here. What did you think about this?
Is he an alien? Why would he be an alien? The chin. And the time travel? That's not right.
You're in Victorian London.
No, I was in Victorian Yorkshire.
How come you didn't tell her?
Time travel, that's so cool.
Can we have a go?
Can you have a what? We want a shot of the time machine.
No.
Listen.
Okay. Or we'll have to tell Dad that our nanny's a time traveler.
Okay, so there we go. That's the clip right at the end of The Crimson Horror where they bring the kids into it. Obviously, what we spoke about a couple of weeks ago was poorly informed. It wasn't the kids from The Snowmen. It was actually the kids from the first episode that this Clara was in. And they're going to be in the next Cyberman episode, the one written by Neil Gaiman. They threw this in at the end. I'm interested in hearing what you think, Tom, because there were a lot of fans online that were very, very, very angry about this for some reason.
Why?
They just felt that it was like shoehorned in at the end. It just didn't fit the conclusion of the Crimson Horror, that maybe it would have been better placed at the beginning of the next Neil Gaiman episode.
Maybe, but like, here's why they did it. Neil Gaiman tends to write really big.
Yeah.
So big that they actually had to rearrange stuff. When I mean rearrange stuff, I don't mean like pieces of story. I mean like entire budgetary things that they planned to do in earlier episodes.
That's right.
Because in later episodes, they had to mishmash and move things around to do Neil Gaiman's story. I have no doubt that if you were really that angry about it, you can go in and watch that last clip and then start the next episode and feel like you got a full. Whatever,
a fuller experience.
You know that if you play the teaser reel that they sometimes play before the Doctor Who, you'll get that.
You know, yeah,
you'll get a condensed version of that. So, yeah, well, that's why I think they did it.
Yeah, I think it'll be fun. It sounds like it's going to be a fun episode next week, and I had absolutely zero problems with that at the end of this episode. I thought it was really good, and it kind of evoked a little bit of a Sarah Jane Adventures feel to it, which was, I think, a nice little tip of the hat to Elizabeth Sladen, perhaps. So I guess we'll see how that pans out, because I always wanted to see one of those kids go for a ride in the TARDIS as well.
Yeah. I don't think we're going to see that.
No, I don't think we will either. Anyway, we've gone well over time tonight, but I think it was worth it. It was a great episode this week. We had lots of rumors to discuss. Next week, Nightmare in Silver is the name of the episode, which is not a very good title, if you ask me. But
I like it. I think it's good.
I like the original working title, The Last Cyberman. I thought that sounded much better. You know, it's a very Neil Gaiman-esque style title, straight and to the point. So I guess we'll see how it pans out. We will catch you all then, of course. Tom, any final thoughts before we close out and say goodbye to everyone?
Dr. Matt.
I knew you were going to bring up Red Hulk this episode, by the way.
Yes. Well, thanks, guys.
Thanks a lot. That's TARDIS Blend this week. We'll catch you next week here at geeksofdoom.com.